This is Karen Testerman. We're back from our break with We Hold These Truths.
On New Hampshire's Family Radio, WLMW 90.7 FM.
And in studio, we have Lauren Spivak, the free market warrior, as he likes to be called, who is, his primary purpose is to give us some economic literacy. And before the break, we were talking about the fact that there's a little bit of quackery going on by both parties, and we, the people out here, are suffering from it. I mean, I keep saying, I sit down at my kitchen table, I have X number of dollars that I can spend, and if I spend too much, it goes on the credit card, and eventually that credit card and the interest comes back and wants to be paid for. And if I don't pay for it, then I can end up in the poorhouse. But it doesn't seem to work that way with the government. What's going on?
Well, the government can do one thing that you can't, and that is print its own money.
Yeah.
Which does put it in a league by itself. If you could print your own money, your relationship with your bills would be entirely different. The problem is there's consequences to that. The government can't print the money with impunity and have no effect on anybody else. The fact is that it ends up impoverishing. The act of the government will put you in the poorhouse as much as your going into debt would put you in the poorhouse. The government printing money will put you in the poorhouse when you find out that your assets, your bank accounts, your savings, your pension, your fixed anything that pays in a fixed quantity of dollars becomes worthless. And we've seen this over and over again throughout history. It's not a new thing at all. One of the things I use as a prop in my seminar, Economic Literacy, is I have someone gave me a $100 trillion bill. And it's real. It's a genuine $100 trillion bill from Zimbabwe, where that's enough to get you a 12-ounce Pepsi. Okay. $100 trillion. Okay. So I don't know how many of your listeners, you know, have $100 trillion saved in the bank, but if they woke up one morning and found it was enough to buy a Pepsi, they would realize that they had been robbed. And a policy where we're essentially running the government on printed money, you know, gets you there. It's no mystery what causes that kind of, what causes any kind of inflation.
Right. And it's sort of a hidden factor in there in that you think that you've got a certain amount of money, and then you try to buy something with it, and all of a sudden that loaf of bread that used to cost you a dollar now costs you $2, and it's because of the printing of money.
Well, inflation is essentially caused by printing money.
Yeah.
I remember when the 70s, and I bet you remember the 70s too. Remember Gerald Ford?
Oh, yeah.
We used to have these pins that said whip inflation now, because apparently in the 70s, people thought if you wore those pins, that would cure inflation. And of course, it's ridiculous. Inflation is caused by printing money. I mean, there's no mystery to it. You make more of anything, its value goes down. If I quintupled the supply of orange juice, the price of orange juice in the supermarket would plummet, would it not? The Federal Reserve has already quintupled the quantity of money in our economy, and that's not including this last round QE3. It's quantitative easing, I should say. It's been nicknamed QE3, wherein they're essentially printing $1 trillion a year. Their plan is to print at the rate of $1 trillion a year in perpetuity, I mean, until they decide to stop doing it, and that's the deficit. Somebody suggested to me the other night at an event I was at in Maine that maybe, you know, the deficit doesn't really matter. And I said, well, if that's true, then why don't we get rid of the tax code? I mean, why are we taxing people? If you can spend $3 trillion and print one of those $3 trillion and that doesn't have any problem at all, why don't we print the other two and save everyone all that paperwork and all this bother of paying income tax if you can print it?
Well, I saw a someone did this illustration that I thought was actually brilliant, because it brought it down to what I could actually wrap my head around. Trillion you know, has so many zeros after it, you just can't even imagine what it really is, where this person had taken the eight zeros off the back and said, okay, here's what it really looks like. And I'm going to pull numbers out of the air because I don't have it right in front of me. But say you actually as a household, and many households, this would be the very wealthy household folks, but say you brought in $217,000 a year, but you're spending $385,000. And what our government has proposing to put towards the difference is like $385.
Yeah, so, that's right.
You know, it's so when you look at it like that, you go, holy smokes, no wonder we have the problems. And when you were talking about the QE1 and QE2, I just was thinking there was a time when you couldn't print money, that every dollar was backed by a piece of metal.
That's right.
And that when we were doing that, we didn't have the major deficit that we have today.
Yeah, we can't. Well, you can't really have this kind of a deficit because we're borrowing not only more money than we're saving. Because, you know, in true borrowing, there's nothing wrong. Well, maybe something wrong with government doing it. There's nothing wrong in the private sector with borrowing money. If you're trying to start a business or buy a house, you need to borrow money, that's fine. But every dollar borrowed must be lent. You know, it's a zero-sum game. You can't borrow more dollars in the overall economy than are lent. Somebody has the extra dollar that you're borrowing. And that's how that institution, that concept works. But in our current situation, the government is borrowing more money than everyone in America is willing to lend or able to lend, plus all the money that everyone else in the world. You know, people used to be afraid the Chinese were lending us all the money and we were indebted to the Chinese. They stopped lending us money a couple of years ago. They're not doing that anymore. Okay, we're printing it because there's no one even there to lend it to us anymore.
Well, exactly. And that's a major problem because we still owe the money to the Chinese.
Well, we will end up ripping off the Chinese. Okay, for those of you who don't like the Chinese, and I'm not fond of the Chinese government, I don't have any problem with the Chinese people. But for those of you who are anti-Chinese, the good news is we are going to rip off the Chinese. We are going to print, and I can predict this with great confidence. We are going to end up printing a $1 trillion bill. Just like Zimbabwe, and handing it to the Chinese and saying, there we go, we're even. And you know, if that shouldn't make you too happy because we're going to rip off everyone else at the same time.
Well,
every dollar in your pocket loses value together. We can't make the money we owe China. Inflation is essentially a system, a phenomenon which moves wealth away from creditors toward debtors. And that's what it is. Okay, it takes money away from the creditors and gives it to the debtors. If you owe money, you like inflation. If you have money, you won't like inflation. And the biggest debtor in the whole world is the United States government. Okay, so no one will benefit more from inflation than the government will, because they're the biggest debtors. And that's significant because they're the ones who decide if we're going to have inflation, because they're the ones who print the money.
So is there any way out of this? I mean, I hear occasionally you'll hear rumblings about, well, we need to get rid of the Federal Reserve. Is that even a reality? Is that something that we could ever really do?
Oh, sure. Well, anything is potentially a reality. You know, it's all a matter of, you know, what people are you know, what ideas are current, what people are intellectually ready to swallow, which is why I'm trying to have a positive impact by telling people the truth about economics. But the Federal and the Federal Reserve isn't doing us any good. So I don't have any particular desire that we should hang on to it. If an opportunity came to get rid of it, I'd probably be in favor of that. However, the much more immediate problem is that the government is spending insanely too much money. And the fact that when we get into a sequester situation, which is threatening to, you know, cut off, you know, 2%, and by the way, it's not even 2% cut. We'll spend more money under sequester than we spent last year. It's 2% less increase than they thought we were going to have.
Well, here, okay?
It's a complete joke, and the president's running around saying, "Oh my gosh, we're gonna have blood in the streets," and the Republicans don't even seem to be capable of coming up with serious proposals. The fact is that you could cut government spending by 10 times what the sequester amount is, 10 times today, and you would lose nothing that's a useful job of government. This is not about austerity. Okay, I hate the term austerity. The government does stupid things that are making us poorer. All we have to do is stop doing stupid stuff that makes us poorer, and we would solve at least the fiscal side of the problem.
So, for example, what are some of the things that we could do today that would reduce the amount of money that we're spending?
Well, I think you could get rid of several whole departments in Washington. Okay. None of which, and if you listen to the rhetoric that you hear on this, it'll hurt the poorest America. No, it won't. You think the Department of Energy, you know, helps the poorest Americans? The Department of Energy is there to make sure we have less energy. The Department of Energy makes us poorer, okay, because they get in the way of developing energy. That's what they see as their job. They were invented by Jimmy Carter in 1979 with a mandate. Do you remember this? Their mandate was to reduce America's dependence on foreign oil, which has doubled since they were created. So they haven't accomplished what they were set out to accomplish. They get in the way. If we completely eliminated it, lock, stock, and barrel, we'd save billions of dollars. In fact, I don't have the numbers in front of me. That could probably pretty much handle the sequester amount right there. And you're not taking anything away from the poorest Americans. You're making the poorest Americans better off because they'll be able to fill their gas tank more cheaply. The Department of Agriculture pays farmers not to grow crops. And the result of that, okay, so money's being taken out of everybody's paycheck to pay the farmer. I tell you, the government mostly makes us poorer. We don't need this stuff. Even if it were free, if the Department of Agriculture said we won't charge you any more money, we'll reduce the food supply for free, I still wouldn't want it. Because what they're doing is bad in and of itself. And the fact that we pay for it just adds insult to industry, to injury. So they pay farmers not to grow crops, which drives up the price of groceries at the supermarket. So you're paying for this twice. You pay more at the supermarket, and you pay your taxes to pay the farmers not to grow the crops, as opposed to just letting them produce as much as they want, which would make all food, cheaper. And then, of course, you have poor people who now can't afford the food. Why can't they afford the food? Because the federal government has had a policy since the 1930s of deliberately driving up the price of food. If you ask them, why are you paying farmers not to grow crops? They'll say, well, we have a theory, an economic theory that's good to have high crop prices. But it's not. That's just economic quackery again. The quack in this case was named John Maynard Keynes, in case you want to look up who the quack was. And so we pay food stamps to the poor people so they can afford the food that after we drove up the price of it. You pay for this three times over. Just stop. We don't need a federal Department of Labor. I personally think that if you work someplace and you don't like the job, you don't like the deal, the conditions, whatever, that you ought to get another job. There's the idea that, you know, the workers are just slaves to the business owner. I think that's nonsense. I think it's a two-way street. And I think you can find a job that has the conditions which you like. We make these kinds of trade-offs all the time. But even if you would say to me, well, the workers just can't defend themselves. We need a Department of Labor to look after their interests.
I thought that's what the unions did.
The unions are fast disappearing everywhere other than government workers. But if you would say, okay, so we need the Department of Labor, and I don't quite accept that, but for the sake of argument, I will. Every state in the union has a Department of Labor. Don't you think it makes more sense to handle this on the state level? And we're doing it both. We have both a State Department of Labor and a Federal Department of Labor. Why would you go to Washington because your employer in, I don't know, you know, Denver, Colorado is mistreating you? Why wouldn't you go to the Colorado Department of Labor? Get rid of the Washington Department of Labor. We lose nothing other than just duplication.
Right.
This goes on and on and on. The Department of Education, you know, educates nobody. Okay.
In fact, it's interesting as you brought up the energy comparison. The Department of Education was supposed to help us be competitive in science and math with the rest of the world, and we keep slipping down the scale on that measurement.
Well, that's an interesting topic unto itself. I don't know what direction you want to go in with this, but we have an education crisis in this country because our educational system is utterly failing.
Yes.
And it costs more and more and more and more. The price is skyrocketing, and the quality that we're getting out of it is plummeting. We have the most ignorant generation of college graduates in the history of America this year. They know nothing about anything. If you don't believe me, go find a relative, someone in your family just graduated from college. Go talk to them. They know nothing. They're unbelievably ignorant. And we're paying more for this than ever before. I actually have a term for this. I call it the education bubble. Remember the housing bubble?
Yes, yes.
That's when your house, when the price went up and up and up and up, and you were like, oh my gosh, it was worth $100,000, now it's worth $200,000, next year it's going to be worth $400,000, and soon it'll be worth $1 million. And then the bubble, what happens with
burst.
The bubble? It bursts.
Right.
And you realize that your house is never going to be worth $1 million, and it was never going to be worth $1 million, and your two-bedroom, one-bathroom house in suburbia, you know, wasn't worth even what you paid for it, because because a bubble is when the perceived value of something exceeds the actual value, and it becomes a kind of a spiral. That's exactly where we are with education. We have this idea that education must be pricelessly valuable, and so we dump more and more money for less and less result. It's going to burst. And I don't think that far in the future we're going to wake up and realize that we've educated people in nothing, and they're not educated, even though we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to do it. I'm a Sowellian, which is, let's say, a follower of Thomas Sowell.
Sowell, yes.
At heart. And one of the things that Sowell always emphasizes is you got to look at the system, not the people and not the policy, but the system. The policy is there and the people behave the way they do because the system creates that set of incentives. And in this case, I think the system is government schooling. The fact is that we pay about double the cost of private schooling through government schooling. And people think they're getting it for free, and of course they're not. It's the major reason why we have property taxes. And I think if we would all be much better off if we'd give people their tax money back and you spend it on the school of your choice, and you would bring a system into this called capitalism, wherein free markets cause all the players to try to get the best result with the greatest possible efficiency.
Well, we have to take another quick break. This is Karen Testerman with We Hold These Truths.